It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Hey, did you see the picture of this 2-year-old boy in Texas who used his mom's phone to order 31 cheeseburgers from McDonald's? It's impossibly hysterical. He went on the DoorDash app, and I guess he just kept clicking on it or something. And then, you know, delivery guy shows up with all these burgers. The mom handled it great. She she gave some away to some needy people. She gave the rest away to her neighbors. I guess she must have eaten a couple of them. And she's not mad at anybody, so that's nice. No lawsuit. Speaking of ordering things, I ordered a computer recently. And, major company, Hewlett-Packard, and you get a thing and it says you'll be delivered in 3 to 6 business days. And you know, I understand there are delays and global supply chain and so forth. But then a couple of days later, I get another email saying it's not going to be delivered for an additional month. And then there's an explanation there about, well, you know, we're waiting to get into the facility. In other words, they have their own delays due to global issues. And, and we will do that and you'll get it in a month. And it's okay. I don't urgently need it. But here's my problem. Why say 3 to 6 business days? It's a lie. They knew it was a lie. They can't produce it in 3 to 6 business days. Why not just say, hey, because they think people will drop the order. Hey, we would love to make this computer for you and make a lot of money. However, you will not be getting it for 6 weeks. And then somebody can plan accordingly. I just felt sort of bamboozled by it. First world problem, sure, but, you know, the global economy is all interconnected. Hey, you know, after 2.5 years of just being worn down, as everybody in the world is, as certainly everybody in America is, by COVID-19, now I got to worry about monkeypox? Seriously? At first, I'm just trying to tune it out. I guess there were 3 cases now in America. And, you know, part of me is thinking, well, is this like it was in, you know, January of 2020, where we just thought it was some problem in Wuhan. And the next thing you know, it's changed all of our lives probably forever. Well, in this particular case, from the research I have done, and by the way, it's called monkeypox because it was first originally discovered in monkeys, and it's been around a long time. It sounds so much worse than chickenpox, though. The latest outbreak, which is mostly in Europe and Africa, had to do with people having sex with multiple partners at raves in Europe. And so somebody on Twitter said, you know, note to self, do not go to any raves in Europe. It looks awful just from a visual point of view. It does not seem anywhere near as transmissible as coronavirus. So hopefully this is something that can be managed, but, you know, add this to the list of the world's woes. You know, Tom Friedman, the Pulitzer Prize winning New York Times columnist and author and foreign affairs expert, had lunch the other day with Joe Biden. Now, how do I know this? Well, here's the column. President Biden invited me for lunch at the White House last Monday, but it was all off the record, so I can't tell you anything he said. At that point, my interest kind of went down. I can, though, tell you 2 things, what I ate and how I felt after. I ate a tuna salad sandwich with tomato on whole wheat bread, with a bowl of mixed fruit and a chocolate milkshake for dessert that was so good it should have been against the law. And then he goes on to kind of give his view, saying that, you know, for people like some of those on Fox who say Biden can't put 2 sentences together, he just put NATO together, Europe together, and the whole Western alliance together. Well, here's the thing. Some people saying, oh, how is this? Why should he have off the record? By the way, I don't have any problem with that. All of the Sunday hosts and TV anchors have off the record lunch with presidents of every administration every year on the day of the State of the Union. The idea is the president doesn't have to watch every word and you get an idea and insight into his thinking. And you can tell from this Friedman column that he's a little bit informed by whatever their chat was. What struck me is 2 things. 1, you know, Joe Biden, who doesn't exactly court the press, who's gone more than 100 days without doing a sit-down interview, I think it's good. I think he should do more of this. Surprised that he would devote an hour or whatever it was to a meeting with a New York Times columnist. Secondly, you know, Friedman is back. I mean, he played golf with Barack Obama. Some people thought that was too cozy. He was a fierce Trump critic, and now he's having lunch at the White House. All right, a lot to get to here, so let's get to number one. I dealt with this on Special Report. I was on the panel last night, and it has to do with President Biden and Taiwan. So undoubtedly, you've heard something about this by now. He's in Japan, and he's responding to a reporter's question. It was Nancy Cordes of CBS News. And what the president said was pretty starkly, clearly, and unambiguously, in my view, that he would use military force to defend Taiwan if it were attacked by China. Now, this prompted a global furor, and something that's become kind of almost a ritual now at the Biden White House, the walk back. Didn't take very long before the White House put out a statement. So you watch this thing, and here's the verbatim. Nancy Cordes, you didn't want to get involved in the Ukraine conflict militarily, meaning directly, obviously, for obvious reasons. Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that? Yes, said Biden. It was sort of a pause. She said, you are. You know, she was trying to draw him out and get more of an answer. That's the commitment we made, said Biden. And then we get to the walk back, which is basically what you just heard the president say. Yeah, he didn't really say it. As the president said, our policy has not changed, said the White House statement. He reiterated our one China policy and our commitment to peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I got a few things to say about this. First of all, nobody's fooled here. You know, it's on videotape. What the president said is what the president said. So they seem to be two aspects of this. It's sort of like, okay, Biden didn't really say that. But if he did say it, he didn't mean it because we haven't changed the policy. Now, this is the third time since he's been president that Biden has said we should defend Taiwan militarily. Now, you know, we have security guarantees to countries like South Korea. But we don't strictly have one with Taiwan, which, of course, is the only remaining democratic part of China, and which China has long considered a breakaway province, and has always said that one day China will be reunited. But Joe Biden is saying, you know, he is changing the policy if you read his words, and it wasn't like a slip of the tongue because he's said it a couple of times before. This is what he thinks. This is what he believes. And I don't see where it's a terrible thing for the rulers in Beijing to know that that's how Joe Biden regards this. But what Biden did was he dispensed with the usual foggy bottom, murky diplo speak about these things, which is strategic ambiguity. Strategic ambiguity is you don't say exactly what you could do. Maybe we will defend, maybe we won't defend. I don't know. After Russia has invaded Ukraine, after China has made some provocative moves in the Taiwan area, maybe it's better just to say what's on the mind. But here's a New York Times story. Biden's comments went beyond simply reiterating that the United States would provide China with arms because the question was posed as a contrast to what he had done with Ukraine. The president made no effort to qualify what he intended when he said he would get involved militarily. And there you have it. So why do these unnamed White House aides, and I know the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, also said this on camera, why do they keep walking back what Biden said? And I said that on the air. I said, is there a secretary of walk back? Because he's the president of the United States. He's the commander-in-chief in the military. This is the policy that he wants. He was elected. All these other people were not elected. They were appointed by him. And the second question is, why does the president allow this? He says what he thinks. I mean, you know, there's a long pattern here. You go back to when the president said he called Vladimir Putin a war criminal, and then he had to qualify. Well, that's a legal term. I'm just giving my personal opinion. Then he said, I don't think Vladimir Putin should remain in power. Boom. There was the White House walk back. But then, a couple days later, Biden said it again. He doesn't think Putin should remain in power. I'm not calling for regime change, but I don't think Putin should be able to remain in power. So if you like what Joe Biden said, and by the way, a lot of the hawks, including Republicans, people like Lindsey Graham and Newt Gingrich, are praising President Biden for saying what he said, for giving a simple declarative answer, yes. A lot of other people are kind of freaking out because, oh, what if this upsets Beijing? And, you know, this carefully worked out over the years and blah, 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 blah. Now, when Donald Trump used to do this, say something that his own aides felt they had to walk back, you know, sometimes it was fresh thinking by him, such as like, why shouldn't I meet with Kim Jong-un? Although in the end, that brought us absolutely nothing. Sometimes it's wild, like, why don't we buy Greenland? But, you know, the media would just completely and totally come down on him and say he doesn't know what he's doing. And, you know, thank the Lord for people like the Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense and National Security Council that they are preventing Trump from doing what he wants. Here, you know, everybody knows whatever his flaws and weaknesses. You know, Joe Biden was chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, 8 years as vice president. He knows what he thinks about foreign policy. You can say it was a dumb thing to say. You can say it's too risky. You can say he put us on a collision course for some kind of military clash with China. That's fine. But you can't say that he didn't intend to say these things. Although, today, asked again at some sort of press avail, whether the old policy, strategic ambiguity, which what does that mean? It's just mushy, was dead, Biden said no. He was asked again. The policy has not changed at all, Biden said. I stated that when I made my statement yesterday. Well, sorry, Mr. President, but actually you didn't say the policy had changed at all. You said something that was quite different. So here's the final riddle of this, which is, why does Joe Biden allow these people to work who work for him to do these walkbacks, to issue these statements, to clarify what the president really meant to say? He didn't really change the policy. He didn't say he changed the policy, but if he did, he didn't mean it. Because that's what creates all this confusion. Now, one thing that occurred to me is it can kind of be a good cop, bad cop routine. Biden doesn't really want to change the policies, but he wants to let President Xi and others, same thing with Putin, know how he feels. And then they can say, well, you know, they may say this is the policy, but Biden, who knows what he'll do if he feels that strongly about it. So maybe there's some sort of nine-dimensional chess going on, or, you know, the White House just sort of runs on its own and puts out these statements. I mean, you're the president of the United States. Your view is that you will defend Taiwan militarily. And then you let your subordinates knock it down? I don't get it. Maybe we'll find out more.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, story number two. This is a piece in the Washington Post that's basically about a kind of a Republican civil war, particularly Republican governors. There's a Republican Governors Association which decided to spend millions of dollars in primaries. That's pretty unusual because usually you let the process sort itself out and you save your money for running against Democrats in the fall. So the Governors Association invested $5 million in Georgia, whose primary is today. It's getting a lot of attention. Stacey Abrams said something dumb. David Perdue said something arguably racist in response to her saying something dumb. In any event, $5 million intervening in a Republican primary. And of course, you have the spectacle of Mike Pence, who appeared yesterday with the incumbent Republican governor, Brian Kemp, who Trump hates. And you have Trump trying to lend his endorsement to David Perdue, who's, you know, 30 points down, is going to get clobbered today. I should have given you a spoiler alert, right? But it is kind of an insight into what's going on. Here's Chris Christie, who is the helping with fundraising for the RGA, and who obviously wants to run for president again in 2024, saying on the record, this is not the best use of our money. We'd much rather just use it in races against Democrats. But he says it was made necessary because Donald Trump decided on the Vendetta Tour this year. So we need to make sure we protect these folks who are the objects of his vengeance. Vendetta Tour, which obviously has been picked up in quite a few headlines. And, you know, you can go through the list. Oh, the Trump's person for governor in Idaho lost here, but he's going to win here, and Herschel Walker is probably going to win. Trump gave at least a brief interview to the Washington Post saying it's not easy to beat a sitting governor. I'm the one who got that guy elected, meaning Kemp. I endorsed him and he won. He's not good on election integrity. I did a terrible job on election integrity. We'll see what happens. He says, I heard Purdue is surging. No one else seems to have detected this surge. So I guess Trump, you know, he knows this guy is going to go down, and he wasn't going to withdraw his support at the last minute. He has done that to others, by the way. But it's just so fascinating that you have one chunk of the Republican Party fighting another chunk of the Republican Party for who would be the strongest candidate in November. Now, the New York Times take on this is to build the whole story around Mike Pence. Mike Pence for months has been edging away from Donald Trump. After 4 years of service bordering on subservience, the increasingly emboldened Mr. Pence is seeking to reintroduce himself to Republican voters. So, you know, he gave some speeches. He says Trump was wrong in trying to push him into blocking the Electoral College ratification on, you know, the day, January 6th. And he's obviously trying to sort of declare independence from the guy who he worked with and for 4 years. Now, this had to sting, I think, because listen to this statement that Trump issued through his spokesman. Mike Pence was set to lose a governor's race in 2016 before he was plucked up and his political career was salvaged. Now, desperate to chase his lost relevance, Pence is parachuting into races, hoping someone is paying attention. That's pretty rough stuff. Interestingly, Pence is not promising not to run for president if Donald Trump, as the world expects, runs for president again. He says, we'll go where we're called. And that's a reference to, you know, we pray on these things, my wife Karen and I, and we'll go where we're called. So I don't know. It still seems to me that Pence... you know, he's got some fine qualities, but he's a man without a country. The people on the left and maybe independents don't like the fact that he was beyond loyal to Donald Trump for 4 years. Because so he carries the albatross with people for people who don't like the former president of the 4 year Trump Pence record. On the other hand, the people on the right, at least the ultra MAGA crowd, don't like the fact that he, in the view of the former president, betrayed him by refusing to block the certification by the Electoral College of Joe Biden. In reality, you know, I know, the rest of the world should know, that he absolutely had no authority to do that. It would be one man, sitting vice president, saying, I'm sending this back to the states. You know, Pence did the right thing under enormous pressure. And that has led, I don't think they've talked for a year, that has led to a real schism between the two men, but Pence still thinks he has a shot, and so he will take it. Story number three. This is a very big deal, and I don't think it's gotten enough attention. And I happen to be reading from a column in National Review by Rich Lowry, but you remember when the entire media establishment went completely and totally bonkers over the Georgia election law that was widely described as being too restrictive, discouraging people from voting. Remember when Major League Baseball moved the All-Star game out of Atlanta? All because the Republicans in Georgia had done this horrible, terrible thing. And there were things in there about, you know, you can't give food or water to people waiting online that, you know, were troubling. Well, guess what? If you just look at the early voting now, because I think the law did allow for to make it a little easier to vote early, while also requiring ID, which a lot of people didn't like. On the Republican side, so far, up until today in Georgia, 453,000 early votes, 29,000 absentee votes. That's compared with 153,000 in the last midterm, 2018, and 14,000 absentee votes. So it's gone from 153 to 453. That's a tripling. It shows you how interested people are in the various races in the Peach State. Democrats, okay. This year so far, 337,000 early votes, 31,000 absentee. 2018, 134,000 early votes, and 13,000 absentee. So, in Lowry's view, it never made sense that the Georgia law was going to stop anyone from voting. The provisions the left complained about were innocuous. We can debate that. But, you know, so the most interesting part of this is the media reaction now. And by the way, Lowry looks back and he says, you know, if you look back to what was said at the time about the new Georgia law, Charles Blow in the New York Times, voter suppression must be the central issue. And there were other headlines like, Mr. President, you're just plain wrong on voter suppression. Here's another Liberal Times columnist, Jamel Bowie. If it's not Jim Crow, what is it? Here's a University of Maryland professor quoted in the Washington Post. Georgia's voter suppression laws betray the promise of Reconstruction. And then Joe Biden gave a speech. He said, every Democrat, independent Republican will have to declare where they stand. And you'll remember this line, the key soundbite in the Biden speech. In Atlanta last January. History has never been kind to those who side with voter suppression. Do you want to be on the side of Dr. King or George Wallace? The side of John Lewis or Bull Connor? The side of Abraham Lincoln or Jefferson Davis? Well, then how do you explain the fact that there's been this incredible surge in early voting if the idea was to make it hard for people to vote? Now, the Washington Post did acknowledge this in a story saying voting is surging in Georgia despite controversial new election law. But according to Lowry's survey, at least a lot of other places were just saying, hey, look at all these, how much early voting there is in Georgia, without even addressing the fact that this had been the number one controversy in America for a certain period of time. Okay. Let me move on to number four. Did you read about this diplomat in Russia who resigned? He was a mid-level diplomat to the UN in Geneva to protest the war, Boris Bondarev. And what he said was, you know, obviously he's still a diplomat. I doubt he holds on to his job. And look, he's probably put himself in danger. I've never been so ashamed of my country, he said. Goes on to say, the aggressive war unleashed by Putin against Ukraine, and in fact, against the entire Western world, it's not only a crime against the Ukrainian people, but also perhaps the most serious crime against the people of Russia. Those who conceive this war want only one thing, to remain in power forever, to live in pompous, tasteless palaces, sail on yachts comparable in tonnage and cost to the entire Russian Navy, enjoying unlimited power and complete impunity. To achieve that, they are willing to sacrifice as many lives as it takes. That's pretty incredible. And you wonder whether there's a lot of other people in Russia who feel that way, but only a few have the cojones to speak out as this guy did.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Story number five. Kellyanne Conway's new book is out today. You may have read some of the excerpts and some of the leaks. I've had a chance to go through it. In fact, my column today on Fox.com. is FoxNews.com is very much about this very question. And here's some of it. Basically, after all the people who left the Trump White House writing books about how terrible and horrible he is, and if only he'd listened to me, Kellyanne Conway is still very loyal to Donald Trump. But there's one highly significant exception. The name of the book, by the way, is Here's the Deal. So the woman who was the former White House counselor for almost 4 years says, you know, Donald Trump is wrong. The election wasn't stolen. What's more, she says that she told this to the president. In fact, the way she describes it is, many Trump supporters deluded themselves and, quote, I may have been the first person Donald Trump trusted in his inner circle who told him he had come up short this time. Now, she doesn't sort of directly criticize him, but she does break with him. She says, no, Joe Biden was fairly and legitimately elected. She also talks about January 6th and how she frantically called a Trump aide cell phone to deliver the message. Add me to the chorus of people calling to urge the president to tell the people at the Capitol to stop, Just stop. Get out of there. Maybe there are loudspeakers. They need to hear his voice. But then she goes after some of the people on Trump's team. Rather than accepting responsibility for the loss, they played along and lent full-throated encouragement, privately, not on TV, when Trump insisting he had won. By not confronting the candidate with the grim reality of his situation, supplicant after sycophant after showman genuflected in front of the Resolute desk and promised the president goods, they could not deliver. She certainly names names in this book. She particularly is critical of Steve Bannon. She particularly is critical of Jared Kushner. So there's a little bit of score settling here. She acknowledges mistakes that she made. For example, you know, it's like the second or third day, I think, right after the inauguration, when she was on the air with MSNBC's Chuck Todd, and she uttered the phrase alternative facts. She says the media made too much of it, but that was a mistake. She also kind of breaks with Trump on this point. The infamous briefing, early 2020, early pandemic, I should say, when Donald Trump started riffing about, well, maybe we should study whether disinfectant can kill the coronavirus inside the body. She says that she had tried to get that briefing delayed because they weren't ready, that an expert that Trump had never even met was going to brief, and he started talking about two different things, ultraviolet light, disinfecting surfaces. Here's what Kellyanne says, an unforced error. The president clearly misspoke by confusing the light therapy and the disinfectants. So there's a lot more here about, you know, her time in the White House, but she does it in a way where almost in every instance, she blames others, occasionally herself, but not the guy that she worked for. Even though, you know, I mean, here you have Donald Trump writing his own book about the, quote, stolen election and trying to defeat those who don't buy the rigged election theory in these GOP primaries. But somehow he's Kellyanne Conway, who's a survivor, manages to maintain good relations with him. There's also a lot of stuff here. I mentioned this on the Media Buzz on Sunday. A lot of stuff here about her husband, George, the strain on their marriage. Trump once called him the husband from hell. And she makes pretty clear that their marriage is in serious trouble. In fact, one of the last lines of the book is, democracy will survive, America will survive, George and I may not survive, because George Conway became one of the leading anti-Trump critics while his wife was in the White House. He did it on Twitter. He did it on MSNBC. He did it through the Lincoln Project. And it looks like those wounds have not healed. I will have a chance to interview Kellyanne Conway for next Sunday's show. So, and I've known her a long time and interviewed her repeatedly when she was a White House official. So one of the reasons I'm interested in that. Let me just throw in a little kicker here. Little extra bonus. Speaking of books, and speaking of the former president getting even with people who write books, although I'm sure he'll have nothing but nice things to say about Kellyanne's book, Deborah Birx, you remember that she was the coronavirus task force coordinator in the Trump administration. She's got a book out, and she's gotten a lot of criticism because a lot of people think she wasn't aggressive enough standing up to the president, including at that infamous briefing about disinfectants, and that she, you know, is now trying to distance herself from particularly the early Trump administration response. Now, certainly not the development of the vaccines, Operation Warp Speed, but I don't think anybody can seriously question that it was played down and underestimated by the Trump administration at the beginning. And by a lot of other people, too, of course. So she's got her book out, and Trump doesn't like it. So he says she lost all credibility when she told people in the strongest of terms not to travel during a major holiday because of the China virus. She then traveled a very long way to be with a large number of people within her family. What she did was so shameful and egregious that her own family actually turned her in. So cool. How much do they hate her? Look, Donald Trump is a street fighter, whatever else you want to say about him. By the way, what she did was she drove from D.C. to Delaware to attend the Thanksgiving dinner. Should she have done it while she was preaching the opposite to people? No, of course it was a mistake. You know, but it's hard during that long stretch not to see your relatives. But then, here's the kicker. Donald Trump, I guess you'd say this is kind of personal, says in the statement about Deborah Birx, she had few dresses, many scarves, and no class. Before I said, you're fired. And here's the kicker to the kicker. I mean, great tagline for The Apprentice. He never fired her. She remained the coronavirus task force chief up until the last day of the Trump administration. So she was not fired. He may wish he had fired her. He may remember firing her. But in actual real world terms, she was not fired. Always keeps it interesting. Hey, I always enjoy spending this time with you. Thank you for listening. Apple iTunes is one of the many fine places that you can get this podcast or on your Amazon device. We'll see you tomorrow with more BuzzMeet.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.